Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to Stipulation, a TNA podcast for the week of August 28 on voicesofwrestling.com. My name is Dr. Nove, and joining me again for another episode of Wednesday Night Impact Review, our second episode of Wednesday Night Impact Review, is none other than Brian. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
It's good to have you back on the show again.
All right. Thanks.
All right, so let's start off with, I guess, the big news for the company we review, TNA, who had their deal extended with Spike TV through the end of the year and maybe even just a sconch longer, so long as they can land on their feet. But right now, it looks like TNA will be moving over to Velocity, Discovery's Velocity. Have you ever even seen Discovery's Velocity?
No, I've never even heard of it. I in looking it up, after all of this, it seems like it's supposed to be a really nice channel. Like, it's supposed to be really
awesome.
It's
like an HD channel.
Yeah. It's all HD.
But
it's supposed to have, like, a whole bunch of really cool Discovery
things,
stuff on
sure,
it.
Sure. But nice channels, I mean, really, in television, nice is viewers.
Yeah. I know.
Discovery Velocity, I was about to call it Discovery Impact, doesn't necessarily have a lot of viewers.
No. Well, here's the thing. I mean, they're still right now calling that the last, the
fallback
backup plan.
But now it's officially kind of out in the open, which leads you to believe that there's maybe not a lot of other places, if none other places.
Right. There might not be any wiggle room now for them
to be. The fallback is now the final plan.
Possibly. And a whole lot of internet, probably.
This company's not built for the internet world,
they're
though.
They're not, but they're going to have to try. They're going to have to put out things a lot like they do their pay-per-views and things like that. They're going to have to put out like their...
They have to rebuild the One Night Only brand if they're going to do that. But at this point, I mean, wrestling fans do not talk about those TNA One Night Onlys. If you go on to Reddit...
Well, they've got a lot of them right now.
Yeah, and they're good. They're actually good product. It's just that, you know, you go on to, you know, wrestling Reddit, no one's talking about those One Night Only things.
Right.
They're not held up as like, oh, you should probably watch this. This is actually pretty good wrestling. And the funny part is, it usually is when they drop whatever week it's available. It's usually the best wrestling you watch that week, unless like it happened to drop on like WrestleMania week or SummerSlam week. If you had to stand it up against Raw, especially this week's stinker of a Raw, I'd rather watch a One Night Only any week of the year than Raw. Most.
As of right now, I believe they've got about four of them saved up for whenever they're going to use them. You know,
and these are nice, but you can't build a brand on them, though. That's the other problem. It's like, I love these. I think they're cool, and they... It's nice because it's all wrestling. It focuses on the wrestling. It focuses on telling rings in the telling stories in the wrestling ring and setting them up a little bit with backstage promos, which is a time-tested classic formula for good wrestling product.
Right, and
but you can't build a brand on that. You can't tell week in week out stories. And TNA, the product is certainly better than it was 6 to 8 months ago. Certainly better than it was even a year ago when we were still kind of stuck in the Aces and Eights malaise and Sting was still in the company. And the company has moved along, but storytelling still seems to be kind of weak with this company.
Well, it is, but it at this point, if they're going to move on and they're going to go to pay-per-views and Velocity and stuff like that.
And who finds pay-per-views? Who's buying these pay-per-views?
They're going to have to market.
They do right around, I think they do less numbers than Ring of Honor. I don't have them up, but Ring of Honor doesn't do killer numbers on internet pay-per-views. I think it's under 10K, and TNA doesn't even get close. I think they get like 2 to 3K.
The one thing that I will say that you can not really blame Impact Wrestling or TNA for is the fact that Spike never pushed them. They never really marketed.
But that's not true. They did. It was just a few years ago. It's not like this year they didn't really push them. If you're going to say in the last 24 months they didn't really push them, that's true. But yeah, they did back. Well, when they tried to go up against Raw, Spike tried.
Even whenever they did that, that was a half-hearted attempt. It didn't seem like they were
out for blood, because remember WWE was on Spike TV. They brought in Impact, and Spike wanted to go to war with WWE for a little while there. It wasn't like they weren't in it to win it like Vince is, because it's his livelihood, and Spike is a network that is run by corporate suits who do not don't view themselves as wrestling promoters. They view themselves as network executives.
But if you could consistently just put out a decent marketing plan for a product that's bringing in the biggest numbers on your network, it just seems like... that's all. If I were a TNA executive, that's all I would be asking for. Like, all you need to do is just, you know, hey, mention with Bar Rescue and all this other stuff that you have, you know, your Cops-a-thon. Hey, at the end of that, guess what? We have TNA Impact Wrestling, and we're going to have blah, blah, blah. They don't even really push. I see like a couple of commercials a week. I mean, it's really, you go to USA and you're going to see...
See, this is where my knowledge, although I watch a lot of TV for my job, I don't actually have, nor have I had cable or any sort of actual real television in my house years.
The biggest difference is, like, you go to USA and you're going to see about 1,000 commercials in a week for Raw, just for Raw.
Sure, sure. They push Raw.
You do that, you go to Spike and you'll see 1,000 commercials, but they're going to be for like Bar Rescue, for Cops, for all the other things that are on Spike, and you'll see like 2 or 3 for TNA Wrestling when it's arguably
the strongest biggest pull draw, on there. But at the same time, I don't feel like when you watch TNA, even these shows in New York, which have been good shows, they still are kind of narratively all over the place and not paced like something that you could bring an outsider into, and they would... None of these shows that we have reviewed in the last 6 weeks have been things that I could show someone who has never really watched wrestling but maybe would be open to watching wrestling. They aren't shows that I could say, oh, watch these will get you hooked and these will make you a wrestling fan. They've been good. As someone who likes wrestling, I like them. They're like, you know, they've been above average or strong enough.
I mean, I actually enjoy the TNA product a lot more than the WWE product right now.
I don't know about that. I am optimistic about the John Cena storyline, even despite this week and the failures of Monday night. But I think that WWE has some room to grow, and I love the stuff they're doing with Brock Lesnar right now.
Right. Well, I just think consistently, like match per match, if you put them up against each other, I would rather see the TNA product most of the time. But neither here nor there.
Yeah, it's neither here nor there. Yeah.
What do they do now? I mean, we're sitting here barking at the problems of it.
This,
but like, honestly, what do you do?
Probably dies now. This is the first week that I've actually felt like TNA's days are really numbered. I mean, there have been people. If you go back 2 years, you go back 5 years, people have been saying TNA is going to die. But I'll tell you what, this company was always standing on two legs. It was standing on a Spike TV deal and a Panda Energy influence
money.
Of cash.
Right.
Though that influx of cash, that infusion of cash, and the Spike TV deal are the two pillars with which this company has stood on. Now one of those pillars is gone, and Panda Energy cash is not going to be enough.
Well, it doesn't mean anything if you don't have somebody to accept the cash.
Well, and how are you going to build the viewership if you don't have a place to be viewed?
Right.
This is wrestling is a product that needs to be viewed.
Well, it's entertainment.
Right, and your kids, the kids, the reason I keep saying the kids is because you need to get kids into wrestling, right? We became, you and I became wrestling fans as kids.
Yeah.
We, you know, I had a, I can point back to the first time I saw WCW Saturday Night, and my friend who made me watch WCW Saturday Night, I was in third grade, and we watched Saturday Night, and it was the shit. But that's, the point being, that's when you get into wrestling. Like, yeah. You, so it has to be on TV. It can't be like, I go on to vidstream.eu or .tv, or, you know, search through Google and find, you know, a web stream of this thing.
Yeah, that's wherever it may be.
If you're doing that to watch wrestling, you're already a wrestling fan. So right. That's not how you're going to build new fans. You have to build new fans by having a TV deal. And who's gonna, I don't get me wrong, I think it's good that you would make your kid watch the Discovery Channel. I had a kid, I would want them to watch nature documentaries and other random shit like that too. Feed your brain. I love documentaries.
No, yeah. Knowledge is power, yada yada yada. But like, yeah,
but that's not gonna, I mean, how many people were parking their kid in front of Discovery HD or Discovery Velocity HD all day? I'm guessing that this network has about 50,000 regular viewers. CNN has less than 1 million regular viewers.
Right.
Yeah, like the cable news by and large doesn't do very good numbers. And so it is all downhill from there. And then you go into the HD thing, so people have to have HD TVs. So now we've entered into a socioeconomic thing where there are a lot of people, primarily poor people, who don't have HD TVs.
Right.
So how the hell are poor people, you know, let's, I don't want to get too deep into it, but wrestling fans tend to trend a little lower on the socioeconomic scale. Well, you're now cutting out a big portion of them. Anyone who's watching on a standard television, like I was, up until about a year ago, a Christmas, my parents bought me an HD TV, and I wouldn't have gotten myself this. So who knows how long it would have been?
Right,
we would
right.
have probably just ended up buying another big screen and having to pick it up from a dubious character like that one time.
Oh no, that's a story for another day.
That's a story for another day. But the point being, so how am I supposed to watch TNA Impact? And how is, you're just culling your audience? You're lopping off chunks of it at a time that you can't be losing anyone from the ship. You need to be adding people onto this ship. Having a television deal is really key for that, and it seems like TNA is a far ways away from having a television deal.
Man, there's a part of me that just hopes that the whole thing is just a huge work, you know, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're just like,
a huge work.
We've actually had this 10-year deal the whole time with Spike, and we just, you know, we're doing this, just, it's a whole work. We're going to bring
the new heel is the network. Yeah. I think WCW tried that towards the end of their run.
You know what? I don't know, man. But there is a part of me that just kind of hopes that, because I really do enjoy watching the recent TNA product.
It's not bad. I mean, it really isn't bad. Not bad would be my general grade for this week's episode.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. I mean, we had a main event match that should have been epic. It was about 11 minutes. It was an exciting and good and energetic and way above average 11 minutes.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing
match. It was
match.
A way that's above a great match. Average 11 minutes. Yeah. No doubt. But when I tell you Hardys, Wolves, Dudleys, or Teams 3D, and I tell you the runtime of about 12 minutes, I get it. It's a series. I get that we're going to see a lot of these guys going out here. But this first one, yeah. I would have liked this first one to have felt a little bit more special. You want to get into Impact? Is there any other major news? Oh, Dewey Barnes got cut. I'm upset about this. We let go of perennial jobber and guy who actually worked at the live merchandise stand, yeah. Dewey Barnes.
It's basically all of the live people, it seems like. All the people that have to do with the live product that they were putting out have been being fired or let go, leading me to believe that there is not going to be much more live product, which was really
this company's
something
going
that I
the
thought they were
way.
Striving towards.
Yeah. Yeah,
they were striving towards doing more often, and now they're not going to do it at all.
ODB got cut.
ODB's gone.
She's gone.
Yeah.
at a time. Brittany, we haven't really talked about her. I don't have any like inside news or anything, but Brittany is AWOL. No sign of Brittany.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in a while.
I haven't seen Brittany ever since she turned lesbian / heel.
I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, if we wanted to get into cuts and stuff like that, I mean, Velvet Sky may or may not be cut.
Bully Ray certainly is.
Bully Ray is...
And that hurts.
They're
that,
not
that's
renewing
a
that one evidently at all. There's... Hopefully also, the Wolves coming up. There's the Hardys, or
and
Jeff Hardy
the
coming
Wolves getting
up.
Injured.
There's, yeah, Davey. He, evidently, he's going to be...
I always get him. Yeah,
no,
Davey.
It's
Davey. It's Davey.
He's going to be fine before the next recordings, though. Okay. So it's... That one's probably not going to be huge.
But they need to at least get Bully some sort of short-term deal to do a show so that they can have a match.
Yeah. Yeah, there's evidently some storyline issues and stuff like that, too. So, I don't know, man. There's also the... my heart goes out to, I guess, Jake the Snake
now.
He's being hospitalized.
Yeah, at the time of recording right now, Jake is in and out of comas with a double pneumonia and a mass on his brain, and we wish him a speedy recovery and nothing but the best. I can't say enough about Jake, one of my favorite wrestlers ever.
He was one of the people in the very beginning that piqued my interest in wrestling.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance, there's like a good, I'm sure you could find it wherever you want to find it, but there's good little top tens of promos of Jake the Snake, and I watched one earlier that was amazing. It was like 7 minutes long, just showed like a good little top ten of him just knocking promos out of the park.
Let's get straight into Impact. So last week, for those of you who don't remember, we had a photo finish. And I say a photo finish because apparently live, Eric Young very clearly put his feet down before Bobby Roode did.
Yeah.
So we turned it into a photo finish. And the whole angle is essentially the Bret Hart, Lex Luger, both feet touch the ground at the same time storyline.
Right. And the obvious storyline from that is... We're going to have a match between EY and Bobby Roode.
Right.
To figure out, you know, who's the better man and who deserves to have the number one challenger, you know, number one challenger.
And Kurt Angle is here to tell us who the number one contender is going to be. And he announces the card for the rest of the night. And then he says that when he knows who the number one contender is, because he's going to meet with Bobby Roode and Eric Young, he's going to tell us. What the hell did Kurt Angle do all week? Kurt Angle had 7 days. He could have reviewed the tape. He could have went back there, talked to the refs. He could have met with Bobby Roode and Eric Young before now. You would think that Bobby Roode and Eric Young would have given enough of a shit that they would have met with Kurt Angle during the week.
I had a thought on this.
Sure.
And let me know what you think. I could be totally off.
Okay.
But I'm thinking this... Okay, now bear with me. This taping was the second group of tapings... From New York. This was the first of the second group of tapings. Therefore, meaning that the six-man cage match that we watched was the last taping in New York, which would put a large space between these two, right?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay, so stay with me.
I am.
Is this the reason that we skipped those tapings? You understand where I'm coming from? Because they messed up and EY hit first,
right?
And it was obvious to that audience. Therefore, if they tried to just go straight over into Bethlehem, Pennsylvania the next week after hearing, because that news, if you want to find it, is there. And it's real easy to, they couldn't just jump right into that again. So they made those one night onlys and then went back to New York and did this six man.
Wow, that's heady.
You know where I'm coming
from
here?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, that they just realized that they had soured the well with the crowd.
So we're just going to walk away from it for a while and come
always,
back later.
Always the risk with doing these shows and running this crowd over and over and over again. Yeah. If you fuck up, you're stuck there for three or four more nights, and then you have to, you know, figure out how you're doing it. That could very well be it. I don't know. I mean, I just sort of chalked this up to weird writing. This whole Eric Young and Bobby Roode thing will continue a little later on. And
right.
I don't hate it. It's just funny to hear. This is like the only time that you'll hear people go, "We're gonna have a match next week," and the crowd erupts because they know that they're gonna be there because it's gonna happen in just a little while for them.
It's gonna be about 6 hours for them, maybe. You know, actually, maybe
I
less.
You know what? I take that back. If you watch WWE Main Event, which you can watch on the network for only.
It's somewhere around $10.
$18.12. That's a war.
That's a war.
Okay. Anyways, if you watch Main Event, they will announce things for SmackDown, and the crowd will be very excited, which you would not be, except that, like, you know, they're doing Main Event, which is on, ostensibly, on Tuesday, and SmackDown's on Friday, except that we all know that SmackDown and Main Event are being taped at the same time.
Right.
So the crowd will get very excited for a thing that will be happening on Friday that they're not supposed to be there for, but they actually are, in fact, going to be there for. This crowd gets excited for that as well. Angle announced the card. Lashley comes out with MVP and Kenny King, and MVP is just cutting a promo about how Lashley is the king of New York and calls New York people trash. And
I love MVP heel talk.
MVP heel is good.
He nails
his promos
it.
Can go on for a very long time.
He goes on at one point and he says things that are weird and I don't understand them and I just go with it because he says something about, like, if I called the cops out here, the New York cops out here, they would have you all in choke holds and then you'd be scared. Or something weird like that.
That's a stop and frisk thing, I think. I think that's a classic
right. Stop
and frisk joke. They love those in New York City.
And then he tells them that y'all would be flatter than Miley Cyrus's ass.
Yeah, that's good. That was good.
I'm like, what? I don't know what you mean by that or where you were going, but...
Well, like, they'd be on the ground, like, because they'd be getting stopped. And I think it was a stop and frisk joke.
Yeah,
I think it was a New York cops are kind of rough and kind of brutal and they hate minorities and stop and frisk.
Yeah.
Anyways, Tommy Dreamer comes out. I'm laughing because I'm still picturing in my head that screen freeze that you and I saw of Tommy Dreamer making like a blown up face. And Tommy Dreamer mid-wine.
It summed up the whole thing. It just
sums
in one
up
face.
Dreamer. Actually, the thing we were watching last night had some technical issues or whatever, and there was a lot of jumping and skipping, but sometimes it was... actually pretty funny. Tommy Dreamer comes out and tries to reason with people in his Tommy Dreamer way. Look, if you've fucking seen him talk to Dixie, you saw this. You didn't see it, but you did see it. It's Tommy Dreamer. This time he's not in Twitter pants. This time he's not in a House of Hardcore shirt. This time he's in an ill-fitting, generic black t-shirt that looks like he's fresh out of a pizza kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... Tommy Dreamer is there and loves New York, and he's from New York, and maybe Dreamer's the real king of New York. Guess what? He's not. Match for the king of New York title.
Yeah, something. It's a New York street fight, but that's basically
no,
what
this
it comes...
this is a match to decide who is truly the king of New York.
Because it's not Christopher Walken,
It's not Christopher Walken. Oh. Not anymore. That was back in the 90s. This is a new decade, man. Oh. This is a very new decade. Your world champion, Bobby Lashley, opens up the show against Tommy Dreamer in a garbage trash match. And there is a nasty belly-to-belly of Dreamer onto the ramp, where Dreamer lands, like, with his back on, like, at a diagonal angle on the ramp. It looked really
right
rough.
On the edge of the ramp.
Oh, it looked rough.
Yeah,
here's
the thing,
big one.
Lashley doesn't even do it like a belly to belly. He does it more because he does like a belly to belly throw.
Yeah.
It's not even like a belly to belly suplex does this way of like.
It's an overhead belly to belly a la like Scott Steiner used to kind of do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, kind of.
He's a lot of big guy. I mean, he's not the only
yeah,
one.
It's,
yeah,
it's definitely one of those big guy things where you
sure.
can generate a lot of.
You're trying to show
of,
that you can throw them over your head.
Yeah, you generate a lot of torque, but like Lashley throws you far when he does it, and he chunked the hell out of Dreamer right into the ramp. It was awful.
So that was cool. There was points outside. I actually liked Bobby Lashley's facial work and just a little bit of his shit talk work. Lashley is good. Very underrated. However, Lashley does still make missteps. We get a bear hug spot, and I just... bear hugs are lame. Bear hugs are lame, and it doesn't do it for me. If I never see another bear hug again, I'm good. And maybe that's just a personal pet peeve. I don't buy the psychology of someone's grip being so strong that you wouldn't just start punching them and hitting them with everything you've got.
I hear you.
It just doesn't work.
I am to cheese grater as you are to bear hug.
I don't like cheese grater either. Yeah, you know, cheese grater is another one that if I never see again, it's like the first time I saw a cheese grater when I was a kid, it's still, I'm like, what is this, the Three fucking Stooges?
Yeah, I was already done with it when it
came
out.
Yeah, it was never good to me.
Here's a couple of the questions that I have.
Sure.
One, if you're Dreamer, mm-hmm. and this was the problem that I had with EY. Whenever EY was having his problems with MVP,
mm-hmm.
And he would come out every week, and he just, to me, looked like an idiot rushing three big guys.
Dreamer didn't look much smarter.
Exactly. Dreamer comes walking out shorthanded, and he has buddies.
He has all of these ECW buddies who show up later. Where are the Dudleys to back up Dreamer?
Where's Rhino at this point? He's made a turn.
Well,
he should be your
Rhino,
buddy.
No, not necessarily. Here's the deal. Let's consider the Rhino position because we're jumping a little ahead, but I'm fine with this.
There's
a lot
of options.
Let's talk about the Rhino. Here's why that doesn't work. Rhino sold all of his babyface ECW friends down the fucking river to side up with EC3, who was a heel, and then eventually blames Rhino for his aunt going through her table. That doesn't make me sympathetic to Rhino.
No.
Rhino's still a turncoat.
Right.
So I don't think that – I don't blame EC – wouldn't expect Tommy Dreamer in our world of kayfabe to want to be hanging out with Rhino.
No, I understand that. But at the same time, I wouldn't be amazed if they were like, oh, hey, man, EC dub for life or something like that. And everything
something
was forgiven.
Like that.
I wouldn't be amazed at that. But either way, no, he didn't bring anybody out.
Yeah, no friends.
And he goes into this shorthanded
against
two of the best in TNA business in MVP and Lashley.
Well, MVP's still on the recovery trail. It's kind of the way he's being used on television. I don't know. I don't know how he went about repairing his meniscus.
Right.
So I don't know if he, you know, if he like got it sewn up and like sewn together. That would be a longer recovery time. If he got snipped, it'd be a shorter recovery time.
Right.
I don't want to go down that road. I think we did that on another episode. But
they also, and then Kenny King's
they're
in
using,
there too.
They have Lashley booked like a monster. And it is 3-on-1. And Tommy Dreamer has this Singapore cane and sort of uses the Singapore cane. Like, he doesn't really try to go. At one point, he tries to go after Kenny King and then doesn't really. And it doesn't make any sense when he should be going after Kenny King. But Tommy Dreamer also like was like, Kenny, you're from New York.
You're from Queens.
You're from Queens.
I do like that they had King from Queens. That's funny to me.
The King of Queens. Whatever. Let's talk about the finish of the match.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that that's kind of the interesting part. And I think and it continues to tell a story that they've been doing as a long form booking, which is crazy because TNA is dropping storylines and is going to have to do all this retcon stuff that is going to be real gross to watch. But the story that they have consistently told for months now is Bobby Lashley wants to win clean. He wants to be the best. He has this babyface tendency in him. He wants to be the fucking champion, for sure. He's a bad man, and he knows it, for sure. But Bobby Lashley wants to win clean. He doesn't want the help of his henchmen. He doesn't want MVP's help. He wants to do it himself. Kenny King gets on the ring the first time, and Bobby Lashley has this look on his face of like, no, man, get out of here. Get out of here. I got this.
He does a little hand raise. Gives him a little hand raise like, hey, man, I got this. I don't need you. And then
Kenny King actually ends up fucking up and kind of putting Bobby Lashley in a slightly worse predicament.
Right.
Almost like Dreamer was good.
But he takes a spear for it. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, Kenny King takes a spear for his trouble. So we're setting the table for the dissolution of MLK, which I think we saw coming.
Right.
The longevity of MLK is always going to be contingent upon MVP's health. Because once MVP gets healthy, he is going to betray Lashley, and we are going to
move right in. Ripples have been set in the water already.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think that they're doing the knee injury to MVP in a weird way has been a huge blessing to them because it has not allowed TNA to fall into its narrative storytelling trappings that it naturally wants to go into because it can't.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they can't.
Yeah, you're screwed.
Just hot shot this MVP Bobby Lashley storyline.
Right.
They have to tell it over a matter of months. And so it's been quite good. I think that, again, the dividends of Bobby Lashley's bookings continue to show. And it makes matches with him feel special. I think he was good. This was not a good match.
It wasn't a
Tommy Dreamer
match,
man. Yeah. Tommy Dreamer...
Tommy Dreamer doesn't belong in there with Bobby Lashley.
Nope.
And the biggest reason is what you were just saying. Lashley wins always wins in a clean sort of fashion. And he's not going to go into a match
in a trash match.
He's not going to hardcore you.
I got a better reason why this match doesn't make any fucking sense. Because Bobby Lashley isn't just giving away title shots. You have to become number one contender.
Yeah.
Let's see the last segment.
Right.
So apparently Tommy Dreamer
this
can come out here.
This should have been at the most Dreamer and Kenny King.
Exactly. Or like Dreamer and Kenny King in MVP in a handicap match.
Yeah, possibly, maybe.
That would have made sense. But this in and of itself did not make sense. So let us continue on. Madison Rayne is backstage. She talks and, you know, begins to show subtle heelish tendencies that we will see carried on through the evening here.
Yeah, she's tired of everybody talking about Taryn.
Everyone's talking about Taryn Terrell.
Because she's number one. Me.
You know, no one's talking about Madison Rayne because Madison Rayne's matches are very,
tired.
Very average. Schwang, wang, wang. Then we get Gunnar and Shaw. This is... You know what I love? This is the segment that you and I have spent the most time rewatching. We watched the main event twice, but we went back and we really parsed through the Gunnar and Shaw stuff. It was actually worth it. I caught stuff that I didn't catch the first time.
Yeah.
So let me set this up. Gunnar is chilling out in his hotel room. Sam Shaw asked if he could come over to sketch the New York City skyline.
Basically.
Gunnar says, sure, that would be cool. And so now we arrive in our scene with Gunnar and Shaw chilling out. Shaw's working on the skyline. Gunnar has his military fatigues out because he's got this thing with the Wounded Wars. He kind of gets mealy-mouthed in there describing what exactly he's doing. But it's for this Chris Melendez debut that we're going to get later on tonight. So they actually do a nice job threading all of this shit together, although...
Or is it?
So early... We can get to that.
Yeah.
So, but theoretically, there was a plan that they didn't stick with that would involve Gunnar being out there, and he had his military fatigues, and he's an Iraq War veteran, and so is Melendez. That's cool. Shaw goes, why do you have those camo? Gunnar goes, oh, it's because I've got this Wounded Warrior thing later on tonight. Then Gunnar comes over, and this is why we had to rewatch it. Gunnar comes over, and we move into ambiguously gay Gunnar, where Gunnar is very, very into Sam Shaw's artistic ability, and he can't draw. He's no good at drawing, and then he puts his hand and his fingers behind his neck and starts playing with the nape of his neckline and his hair, and he wishes he was a good drawer like Gunnar, or that like Sam Shaw was. Yeah,
but he only draws stick figures.
He can only draw stick figures.
It's about as far as he can go.
But you're really good, Sam. Anyways.
He's got to go downstairs.
Yeah, before all that happens, he gets a text. Yeah. He is dodgy about who the text is.
It's just my buddy. Is it Anderson?
Is it Anderson? Which, presumably, it was. If the Melendez thing was booked a little more logically, my assumption would be that it was Anderson trying to get a hold of Gunnar to perhaps talk about the Melendez thing later on. That would be happening later on in the day for them, because this was booked as earlier today.
Right. Yes. Yes, it was.
So, anyways, he leaves. He sort of plays shady with Shaw. He goes, I'm going to go down and get some drinks and some beer. Do you want to come with me? And Sam Shaw, who is mentally unstable, says, no, it'd probably be not a good idea for me to get drinks.
I'm just going to stay here. I'm really into this sketching thing.
I'm sketching, and also I'm mentally unstable and presumably on a bunch of medication because I wasn't in an insane asylum. So anyways... This segment's so ridiculous.
Well, and this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I know. That's the craziest part. Yeah. So we end the scene with Shaw staring at Gunner's military uniform.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
We cut to Madison Rain versus Taryn Terrell, which this match is about establishing Madison's heel turn. And this, when I talk about telling stories in the ring, this is exactly how I like stories told in the ring. Now, the actual execution of the match left a lot to be desired. I didn't think the work was great, but the booking of this match was excellent. Taryn and Madison come out. Madison and Taryn offers to shake Madison's hand. Madison gives a clean shake. So there's a clean shake at the start of the match. Madison is a babyface, even though we've kind of heard, you know, Madison's a little antsy. Through a series of near falls, we start off with a bunch of near falls, and some of them are kind of clunkier than others.
Right.
But the whole point of all those near falls is to establish frustration on Madison's part, and Madison, in that moment of frustration, facing the challenge of a formidable foe in Taryn Terrell, decides that the way she is going to win is by taking the low road.
Right.
Eventually, we get to Madison using the ropes. Now, and also taking advantage, there's two moments here where we see the Madison heel turn really being established. Taryn Terrell goes for a big body splash from the apron to the outside, and Madison kind of lets her take it, and she spills out onto the floor. Madison could have won by countout, but did not win by countout. She decided that, then kind of like looked at Taryn with some concern.
It was a really weird moment,
then pressed
to be honest
the attack.
With you.
That was kind of weird and clunky.
It was
clunky.
A really awkward moment that where was she's clunky. Sitting there staring at Taryn Terrell with concern.
But and, our former president know. Would have called that a decision point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways.
A decision point.
Decision point. She's the decider. So, Madison decides to throw Taryn Terrell back into the ring. The match continues. We have more near falls and a very sort of 50-50 thing. We go a little strong style, female strong style for a minute there. A lot of clotheslines. A few of them from Taryn looked a bit rough. There was one that looked like it caught Madison pretty squarely under the jaw, and then there was another one that looked like it caught Madison pretty squarely on the top of the forehead. And it could have just been good camera coverage, but
honestly, it looked like both of these ladies, even at the beginning of the match, came in tired, maybe.
I don't know. Taryn didn't move, wasn't moving well.
And I've seen her move well.
But Madison.
I've seen Madison move
Madison,
well.
Madison, to me, the gears shifted somewhere in the middle of this match. And we went from being in second gear and we shifted down to the car's barely fucking moving towards the end of this match. So what happens, and this is where I thought things got curious, is they're having a sequence, and it's not going, like, they're going off the ropes and stuff, and things are just not very fluid. It's like they're missing spots. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't know what the game plan was, but stuff just didn't look very natural. It looked clunky. And then eventually, Taryn Terrell kicks Madison in the gut and runs for a swinging neck breaker that has some serious torque on the body, and instead of Madison's body sort of spinning all at once so that she goes from a kind of hunched over position to on her back, we instead sort of cascade with Madison's neck going first, then her shoulders go, then her hips go, and there's like a real screw motion to it. And after this, Taryn Terrell goes for a pin, and Madison's kick out from that pin is like nothing.
Yeah,
it is like she is completely on autopilot. There is
she just kind of raises her arm,
nearly lifeless. And Stifler proceeds to look fairly concerned about Madison and checks on Madison. He actually does go over and check on Madison, but when we rewatched this match too because it was right after the Gunner and Shaw match. We couldn't get the Gunner and Shaw backstage thing. And we just couldn't get enough of. But rewatching this, Stifler really does look concerned. He says something to Madison, and I don't know if the lights were on for the rest of this match with Madison, because her work.
She was wandering.
It was all over
the
place.
She was wandering around.
So the second key spot in this match, in the story of this match, was supposed to be Madison using the ropes. But, dude, she puts her feet up on the ropes, and Stifler is in such a position that, like, he can't help but, like, just immediately, he can't even do a count on the ropes thing.
Right.
Because Madison just, like, goes into the corner and, like, puts her feet up on the ropes.
Yeah.
And Stifler is, like, right within visual line sight of it. I mean, you know, this is TNA. This is the company where Earl Hebner takes a phantom bump. But at the same time, there's bounds of reason. And Madison just didn't look right. So I'm not going to... I don't want to come down hard on her or anything like this. But it's just... This match got clunky. The point
Madison
being,
sucks.
Madison Reigns sucks. Eventually,
I'll come down hard on her. I don't care. I don't like her.
Good God. Good God.
I do not like her.
I think
she's the next one to go, man. She's the next one to go.
Well, who knows? She has a very catchy theme song.
I don't care.
She has a very, very catchy theme song. The catchy theme song will get you a lot further in careers than people think.
It'll get you catching a Taryn Terrell stunner.
Ace Crusher.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the TKO.
It's essentially
the Ace Crusher / TKO. It's not a stunner because she doesn't sit out on it. She goes flat back like an Ace Crusher or Diamond Cutter.
More Diamond Cuttery, I guess.
Yeah, or actually more RKO-y because when I was watching it, she only uses that one arm. She doesn't actually, like, she doesn't do the two-hand cutter.
She just gets the
it's
one.
It's just the one, yeah. Okay. So
here's a big question. Here's a you know, something
let's get
to think
meta.
About. Yeah. At the beginning of this match, there was a final promo letting us know that next week we're going to finally have Jessica Havoc.
That's right.
Okay, so this was for number one contender, and next week there's supposed to be a match with Gail Kim now. It's supposed to be Taryn Terrell, Gail Kim for the championship. You're also debuting Jessica Havoc the same week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking hijinks. What are you thinking?
Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, without seeing the spoilers or anything.
I haven't checked any spoilers on this.
It would make some sense to have Havoc just come out there and smash both of them.
Yeah, just dominate them.
But
I
almost kind of think that what will happen is Gail Kim wins clean next week, and that will set up a program for Havoc. We don't know if
possibly.
She's coming. We don't know if she's coming in as a face or a heel. Madison Rayne is turning heel, so that opens up some new possibilities there. And Havoc, honestly, could work probably on either side of the card.
Yeah.
Just with who's available, who's a face. Like, Taryn's a strong face. You know Taryn's going to be a face.
Yeah.
Gail is, especially if Madison's going heel, Gail is probably staying face for a while here.
Probably.
But theoretically, you don't actually need any more than two faces. So you could have the beautiful people, you could have heel Madison, you could have Jessica Havoc, and so you have, you know, the four heel girls and then the two babyface girls.
Yeah,
and Brooke Testmacher with whatever she's doing with the company.
We'll see about that.
Her and Bully are friends. Her and Bully are friends. They're friends.
Yeah.
They're friends.
Well.
They hugged it out.
Okay.
You remember?
No.
You don't remember that? This is like a few, like a month ago or 2 months ago.
Yeah,
Brooke. Yeah, where EC3 brought out Brooke and said that they had like a Maury Povich thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I remember.
You blacked it out, but that's okay. That's okay. We cut backstage, or we cut back to earlier today, because TNA and Time, they have a weird relationship with it. We go back to earlier today. Sam Shaw has now dressed up as a military man. He's dressed up in Gunner's military physiques, much to the anger of Gunner, who says, "You take it off, or I'm going to make you take it off." More homoeroticism. More homoeroticism.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the route that I'm going with this, but oh my goodness, is it weird? What are we saying here? I mean, what is the
dude?
What's the payoff on this?
I don't know.
Don't revisit this.
I don't know.
This is not revisited anymore throughout the.
Not tonight's episode.
Not
no.
tonight's episode.
No.
It's not
in fact, this is, spoiler. This is the last time we're going to see Gunner in this show.
Yeah, which is annoying as hell to me. Especially being a whatever. I'll get into that later.
He brought the military fatigues.
Yeah. Anyway, that's really aggravating to me.
We're not going to see Gunnar again. We have a six-man tag match wherein Low-Key, Crazy Steve, and Tigre Uno. Low-Key is joined by two jobbers to take on DJZ, Homicide, Manic.
Hey, why? Why are we? Why?
Well, Low-Key and Crazy Steve are very close backstage, and DJZ came up in that earlier backstage segment and said, me, Homicide, and Manic are going to really lay it down on you. You don't even have a tag team partner. And then Tigre Uno showed up, and Taz was like, one tiger. And Tigre Uno was like, that's me. And he said that he would join Steven Low-Key. And so that's how we got this match. Oh, wait, none of that happened.
No.
So this is just a thing that's happening.
Yes. I don't know if any of that would have helped either. But
You say that, but we get a lot of other stupid backstage segments all the time on TNA programming.
We do.
Including a Rhino promo. Are you telling me that that wouldn't have helped more than the Rhino promo that was like... I heard John Pollock describe it as if a South Park like guy wrote promos for wrestling. I'm going to take your head off and stick a firecracker in your bowels so that the 4th of July comes out your asshole and you're going to die and then I'm going to gore you.
Yeah, that is pretty much it.
I had heard Pollock say that earlier today and I was like, yeah, that's pretty much spot on. And so, anyways, the six-man tag match, which is a fine match. It's just for no stakes and doesn't tell any story and is of no significance and probably should have opened the show. Where this is in the card and for the no stakes of this match should have opened the show.
Yeah, easily.
Anything other than your world champion opening up the show is a good fucking idea.
Yeah.
What is it with TNA and doing that? God damn. Like, they've done this world champion opens the show thing. Stupid. Stupid, 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 stupid. A disaster kick from Low-Key, which looks real nasty. It's like, it's a springboard enziguri, but like, I'm calling it a disaster kick. Springboard enziguri, which is probably what Low-Key would call it, into a key crusher on Manic is your finish.
Right.
Pretty good match. You know, Low-Key's offense just is so rough, it's stiff, and he does work snug. And I mean, there are people who don't like his work style, like wrestlers and stuff who don't like his work style because he's a little rough to work with. But man, it looks great. It really does look great.
Here's my thing. Okay,
sure.
This was it was a decent match.
Right,
you're right. I guess whatever. Crazy Steve. Hilarious stuff outside of the ring. Homicide does some kind of strong style, comparatively speaking, in this match. I guess he's the strong style.
He doesn't
style.
Do that much.
Yeah, he doesn't do a whole lot.
No, he just does like a back elbow. There's not like forearm exchanges in the center of the ring, are there?
Not a lot.
Not that I recall.
DJZ's all right. Tigre Uno's good in the very beginning. The whole match.
He can do stuff. He's actually.
Tigre Uno's really good.
His little springboard ropes move that he does,
yeah,
where he jumps from the inside to the outside. That's very impressive. He's a wonderfully nimble guy.
It's good stuff. Most of this was about Low-Key and Manic, it seemed like. Most of it.
Right.
Which I love.
Which is the interesting angle.
Right.
Those would be the two guys you'd want to see wrestle.
Yeah, I would love to just have seen a Low-Key Manic match. That would have been awesome.
But I would almost like it if they had been booking... I don't think they're committed to Low-Key. I don't think he's a long-term addition to this roster. But I would have loved to have seen him as your X-Division champion and as a heel. So we establish this very, very vicious Low-Key. And just take his already kind of stiff and rough-looking offense and put it over as he's vicious, he's unrelenting, he is here to hurt his opponents, and who can stop this guy? The Masked Man. And yeah, the Masked Manic. Yeah, there you go.
And you know what? One thing that he doesn't do that every other person in the X Division does, he doesn't do that weird thing where it's like, okay, I'm going to throw you outside and jump on you.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of get
it's your lucha.
I know. Yeah, I know.
You either willing
I
to
get
go,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't need to see it Like, they did it four times in a row on this match, and it was just annoying. They're like, okay, I'm going to throw you out and jump on you. Now I'm going to throw you out and jump on. Now I've got you, and I'm going to throw you.
I'll tell you what, these luchadors need to scout that better, because they keep getting thrown outside the ring, and every single time.
And it's like they just don't know they're getting jumped on.
They just don't know that the jump's coming next.
Amazingly enough.
This guy's coming over the ropes. He's coming right at me. Oh, my God.
I really do hope that they do something with Manic. Or stick with Manic, and I don't think that they will.
No,
but
I really wish
they'd stick with Manic, because Manic's so good.
You know, he's their Sin Cara. He's a much better version of Sin Cara, but he's their Sin Cara.
He's so good.
He's just like a character thing that they don't actually view as like a real wrestler, because they own the gimmick. Like, the company owns the gimmick. It's not actually that guy's gimmick.
Right.
That's my understanding of the situation.
Yeah.
Anyways, next we get Bobby Roode and Eric Young.
Bobby Roode's.
This is not so much good as it is long. And it is long. And it goes on a while. And Bobby Roode and Eric Young decide that they're going to have a number one contenders match after a backstage meeting with Kurt Angle that Kurt Angle is very, very coy about. plays it close to his vest, and then tells us we're going to see it right after this. TNA and time, man. TNA and time.
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on?
I'm
going
to tell you about this right here next.
Next. Their weird relationship with time. So Bobby Roode and Eric Young say that they are each other's favorites and that they love each other so much, and that Eric Young thinks that Bobby Roode's the world's best wrestler, but next week he is going to be better. And that is pretty much the whole promo summed up in about a minute in what went on for 10.
Literally 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like 9 minutes and 40 seconds
or
something.
You realize
like
it's only a few minutes shorter than
the
our main event.
Yeah.
Which is madness. Just madness. Don't get me wrong. I like that we are tapping the brakes on Bobby Roode versus Eric Young, and we did this build. And in terms of that, in terms of we're not just going to give you the number one contenders match this week, we're actually going to wait a week, and we're going to build this up, and we're going to address it, but we're going to make you want to see it next week. I like that. I think that's good. The thing I didn't like is I didn't need to see this much of it played out in the ring.
Yeah, we had two spots with in the office, and then we had one in ring.
I just need Eric Young to come down to the ring. Angle and Roode are there, and you know, they're talking, and Bobby says to Eric, I have nothing but the utmost respect for you. Eric says, I have nothing but the utmost respect for you. And then EY's eyes lit up, and he goes, you know, I'm crazy, and I've got a crazy idea.
I know what we can do.
Next week, we'll have a number one contenders match right here in the ring. Yeah, you know, whatever. And Bobby Roode, you know, says I
falls count anywhere.
Falls count anywhere. Trash cans.
Because you know, if EY says it, he's just going to throw in something at the end.
Trash cans of death match.
Yeah,
trash cans filled with nails.
Stairway to drills match.
We're best friends. This must be settled in a stairway to drills match.
Chainsaw on a pole match.
You can't win unless you use the chainsaw on your opponent.
It's going to be amazing.
People love that shit.
I'm crazy.
Or actually, you know what? Give this New York crowd what they want. Loser must be lit on fire. Match.
Loser on fire match.
Loser on fire.
I mean, that's just good fundamental wrestling.
Oh, God. Good fundamental wrestling. Rhino versus EC3 is...
Oh,
God damn it. The Great Sonata. James Storm and the Great Sonata.
No, not yet.
Not yet?
There's that, but that comes after that. You're missing the broman spot.
Oh, okay.
Let's not miss the bromance backstage spot.
Yeah. See, this is where my notes got a little bit hinky because of the way we viewed last night.
Yeah, no.
So we got this bromance spot here. The bromans are in the back playing with Tinder, which, if you are not familiar with Tinder is an online dating app, and the way it's essentially a dating game. It's like a mobile game, and you use it for dating. You need a Facebook account to link into Tinder. You set up like a little profile or whatever, and then it's a matching game. You look at ladies' pictures or guys' pictures, if that's your thing, and you click yes, or no, yes, no. And you go through and just vote down. Now, if the other person you voted yes on also votes yes on you, boom, you've made a match, at which point you can message them, and then like there's about like a 40% chance they might message you back. But you made a match with them, and so that makes you feel good. There's a trick to playing Tinder, but that's a different thing. Things you got to keep close to the vest here. Anyways, the bromance are backstage, and they are playing a Tinder race. They are playing the Tinder Games, which is actually an extremely fun reference to the Hunger Games. My whole thing with this is I love this segment. I think this is actually very hip. It's very funny.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's really funny. TNA does comedy. Leaps and bounds better than WWE.
Yeah.
TNA's comedy is so much fucking funnier. And the bromance in EC3 and actually a lot of the stuff on Explosion is like legitimately funny.
Spud.
Makes me, yeah, oh yeah. They're little panel things. Yeah. Whenever they do the panel with Jeremy Borash, it's the bromance. EC3, Spud, and like sometimes they'll bring in Loki or they'll bring in like Sonata. They'll bring in other people to play the straight man. But right. TNA's funny guys are actually legitimately funny guys.
Yeah. No, and bromans are hilarious, man.
They really are.
Tinderellas. They're looking for Tinderellas.
Looking for Tinderellas, and the whole point of the Tinder games was to have the most Tinder matches by the end of a set amount of time. And DJ Z counts it down. We hit it. But the real punchline here, the whole point of this story, is that Robbie made a match with a knockout, and he's already got a date with her, which, good for you, Robbie. It's not that easy to get a date on Tinder. Making a match is one thing. Actually transferring that into a date's a whole nother ball of wax. And apparently, so does Jesse. So next week, we're going to find out who Jesse and Robbie are going on a date with. And you may fucking hate this, but I actually thought this whole thing was quite funny. It's probably Brooke. It's how we're going to get Brooke back on TV.
I don't know. I thought it was hilarious. And I think it's hilarious at the same time as like they have a thing online right now where they're doing a date.
You can date a broman.
Yeah, you can date a broman. I was thinking about throwing a wig on, maybe sending in a video and seeing if I could date a bro man.
No?
I just want to go to a taping, that's all.
I mean, here's what I got to do to go see a TNA taping, I guess. Dude, whatever type of lifestyle you want to live, at this point, you know, Obama, gay marriage, they're letting it all happen.
Obama.
You can do whatever you want now these days because Obama. Yeah. So if you want that, you can go and get gay married to Jesse Goddard and live in, what's a gay marriage state? Iowa? I think they're doing gay marriage now. No, I think the judges, that state was where the judges.
Maybe.
You can go there. This is 2014, my friend. And I encourage you to do whatever and I hope that you find love, however you find it.
I appreciate your support.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Up next, we have the great Sonata. Sonata Dust.
No, EC3.
Oh, no, EC3 and the Rhino?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The slow stiffness of EC3 and Rhino.
Oh, this match is about 5 minutes, and it feels a lot longer because it's not a good match.
It's not.
I love EC3, but I'll tell you what. I'm fucking ready for this guy to have an actual match some week.
Yeah.
I love him. You hear almost nothing but uncategorical support from me on this show to EC3, but I'm fucking sick of this guy never having a real match against anyone.
Yeah.
It's been months and months and months, and he, like, the Bully Ray versus EC3 thing, that was a good match, and I get that. That was a good trash match. Like, that's fine. But he hasn't had a real technical classic. He hasn't had a match against a guy like Austin Aries or Bobby Roode or something where technical, real wrestling happens. And that really needs to happen at this point.
Yeah.
It just needs to happen.
And the thing is, you hear all the time for, like, you know, backstage talking and whatever rumors of how great he is.
He sits under the learning tree. He's nothing but a sponge.
Yeah.
He's funny. He's quick-witted. I think he's a main event player guy. I really do. I just, in this entire push of him, he does not have a signature match that you can point to that goes, yeah, this guy's legit. Because he has these fluky wins over departing guys. Like, he has a fluky win over Kurt Angle. He has a fluky win over Sting. He beat Sting in a tag match and like cheated to get the pin over Sting in a tag match.
Right.
That's how Sting put him over. I mean, these are all like sort of fluke, the hardcore American icon. Who is the other one? He beat Oh, he beat Tommy Dreamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a legit match. And he had, but that was actually on like one night only. And I think
But those were hardcore matches, and to me that's a horse of a different color.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever you're making a name
for
yourself.
I refer to them as trash matches. Yeah. It, like, you know, they're fine, but that's they're fine within a story where there's a real grudge. When it's just this week we're gonna go and hit each other with trash. Like it's dumb. It's dumb. I wanna see you guys going and grabbing stuff under the ring because you're so angry at each other that regular boots and punches just won't do anymore. I need to hit this fucking guy over the head with a chair.
Yeah.
Because I hate him. Because we have built up so much equity at this point where it's not about winning a belt anymore.
Right.
It's
this not is about, the grudge. Yeah. This is the
to quote
blood
one day,
feud.
It's not about beating Brock Lesnar. It's about beating Brock Lesnar's ass.
Right.
That's why there should be a trash match.
Yeah.
Not saying that's what I want at Night of Champions or whatever. I'm saying you have a hardcore match when you can't fucking stand a person so much anymore that I need to have access to weapons.
Right.
I'm going to need
this has
that.
Gotten so big.
This time I'm fucking putting him through a table.
Right.
Not, you know, we're going to have a trash match to figure out who the king of New York is.
No.
That's stupid. So anyways, here's, if you want to speak about stupid, guess what happens? Rhino wins, albeit by DQ, but Rhino fucking wins. EC3 gets himself disqualified.
With a chair.
In what was billed as a grudge match, which is weird. It's just like, grudge, because Angle even calls it earlier. It's like, EC3 versus Rhino. Grudge
yeah,
match.
Yeah, grudge match.
That's
you're
not
right.
a stipulation, but it's said yeah. like a stipulation. Like, theoretically, all these people shouldn't like each other on the roster. For some reason or another.
They're all going for the same thing.
Yeah, there's that, too. But, yeah, you work with these guys for a year, and you've got a good enough reason to not like pretty much everyone on the roster through the narratives. So, anyways, Rhino wins. Rhino, like, now, granted, it protects EC3 from being pinned or submitted, and you can say that EC3 cost himself the match.
Right.
That's fine. He's still fucking lost. And the whole thing with him was to have an undefeated streak.
Yeah, he's not undefeated.
Yeah, no.
Technically not undefeated.
No, he's not undefeated.
And
so,
it's not even a huge technically, really.
No,
not,
so this was a dumb, is what I'm saying.
I'm not hiding behind
yeah,
that.
Yeah, this was a real dumb.
The biggest thing that I cared about, honestly, out of this was the Spud reaction at the end where he's like trying to tell...
Sir, no!
Calm down, and trying to get him to chill out.
Spud is over with this crowd. Spud is over with
Spud
most crowds.
Is so
Spud
over.
Is over. Yeah.
And I read an interview that he did recently where he's talking about his future in TNA and how he doesn't want to be part of the X Division at all.
Okay.
So here's my question to you.
Okay. How does he prevent from becoming virtual?
Can Spud beat Lashley for the championship?
No!
Why? But
he's
could.
Fucking Virgil right
he
now.
Could.
He's
he
Virgil.
Could.
EC3 is DiBiase. Spud is Virgil.
No,
I'm not entirely convinced. I know that Spud is over, and Spud's performances have been really awesome, and I like Spud a lot, and I think Spud is much, 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 much more talented than Virgil.
Yes.
It's not even close. The fact that Spud can talk automatically makes Spud much more compelling than Virgil. I'm all for that. But is there a lot of interest for me in a Spud versus Aries program?
No.
Is there interest for me in a Spud versus Bobby Roode program?
No.
Is there interest for me? Spud versus Eric Young could be an entertaining undercard feud. Spud versus EC3 grudge match could be a good thing to work into Bound for Glory. But I don't think that you can book Spud strong enough that he's actually a legit contender in the heavyweight picture scene.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
The thing is, he wants to be booked as, you know, this small guy amongst the trees. I don't know
the
how
giant
long
killer. Wait, he's not Spike Dudley.
Right,
I like Spud, but he ain't Spike.
I don't know how long that lasts though. If you want that to be your character, if that's going to be your character, then you're a valet for life. Simple as that.
The general manager of Impact Wrestling.
You could be there. You could be valet. You could be things like
yeah,
that, but you
be,
won't
yeah,
be a wrestler.
Manager, Commissioner Spud. Actually, there's a lot of fun things you could do with this guy, but I think he's just primarily a talker. You can have him We get into squash matches.
We did visit the thought of bringing in the intergender championship.
Yes, just for Spud. Turning Spud into the intergender champion.
God, that would be amazingly hilarious.
I will give you that. But in terms of Spud as a main event player, and
no.
If he actually, no,
I just don't even see him ever really being a wrestler. Wrestler.
He's one of my favorite guys. Think about what does to your company too. Like, could you imagine WWE? It's not David Arquette as your WCW World Champion bad, but
it's getting there.
It hurts. Yeah, it's not good. There.
You're disrespecting your belt almost.
Yeah,
in a way. You know what
you
I mean?
Are. I mean, because you just can't book this. He's not a good enough worker. Now Spud could do like 450 splashes and like somersault DDTs and all sorts of like very
if there's something
crazy
that he's hiding.
Dynamic high risk stuff like Rey Mysterio. Back when he was really good, like early 2000.
Right.
Late WCW when he was just so good. If there was stuff like that, and Spud could do that, even then it's an uphill battle. It was an uphill battle to make Rey Mysterio a credible champion in WWE.
And
Vince,
even then,
Vince
most
never
people,
really committed to that. But that was that level of a worker. I don't think Spud has that. That's not to say that I don't think Spud's talented. I just don't think that Spud could ever be that guy for you. So, I don't know. It's an interesting thought, but I think Spud's in the perfect role right now, and I could see him doing other things that are similar to this, having new friends that he manages, having him be a distractionary twerp for other people.
Right.
I actually enjoyed that one night only when he and Bully Ray were tagged up together. That was a fun dynamic. The one night only Joker's Wild Tag Tournament.
Oh, it's like two one night onlys ago.
It's a while ago, but that was actually quite funny. And it involves one of my favorite Battle Royal performances of all time, where Spud crawls underneath the turnbuckle
and just hides. Yeah, he hugs the bottom turnbuckle. It's hilarious.
One of my favorite Battle Royal performances of all time. Next, we have Great Sonata, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so James Storm comes out, introduces the Great Sonata, and...
As the first of many.
Yeah. So Storm's Legion is going to be growing. Who will be joining Storm's Legion is an interesting question.
The people that need a rebirth.
Yes, the people who need rebirthening. I understand that.
Rebirthanizing.
Yeah, they need to be rebirthed. I appreciate that. Who would be other people who need to be rebirthed on this roster? Let's play that game.
I mean, there's
Anderson. Anderson desperately needs a rebirth.
Yeah.
But the Anderson,
but
Storm angle is real fresh.
Yeah, you can't go that place.
You know,
right
it's funny too because every time we talk about who needs, like, we always talk about Anderson and Storm. Like, on the show and off the show about how, like, they should be paired together, but the way they've booked it, they've been, like, booked adversarially to each other. And
I don't get it.
It doesn't make sense. Theoretically, Sam Shaw could be a guy who would be fun. You continue Sam Shaw on this journey, and you can make it a much longer story about Sam Shaw trying to find a core, some sort of core thing to hold on to. And so next, after being betrayed by Gunner, which is what it looks like is going to happen, you have Sam Shaw captured by James Storm, who drinks beer, is bloated, and yells at Sam Shaw for a long time and hits him, and Sonata will be over there doing a real shitty Great Muda impression.
I could see him maybe trying to save the bromans.
No, I think the bromans are pretty much a fixed unit.
No, they are, but I could see him trying to, like, going at them and, like, giving them, like, the spiel.
It would be fun to just see the bromance shrug it off.
Yeah.
Like, to have a backstage vignette wherein he approaches the bromance and, like, Jesse, like, pulls up a mirror and starts, like, looking at his arm muscles and going, like, I think I need more definition down here in my lower arm. What do you think, bro? And Storm just gets kind of, like, fed up and trots off.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of places they could go with, like, some of the menagerie people.
Who? The Freak? I don't know. And, like, Nux. I mean, if you wanted to completely rebirth Nux, fine. But I think if you're going to rebirth Nux, then the other thing, I guess you could retool Steve and make Steve into Evil Clown. But I don't know. It seems too on the nose.
I'm just saying, like, these are the places that I would guess that they would be looking.
I guess the other point of this is, as we're discussing this, this roster is not deep enough for James Storm to assemble a faction.
Yeah.
It's just,
and they're not hiring.
There's not enough people on this roster right now
for James Storm to be establishing a faction. People. I mean, Homicide? Are you going to save Homicide?
He's a rental.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know who you're saving, man. Are you going to save the Wolves?
No.
Are you going to save Jeff Hardy, maybe?
That'd be interesting.
That would be an interesting angle to try to go at.
If you had Hardy and Sonata as James Storm's henchmen, but that almost seems completely counterproductive. Like the reason they turned
Jeff... He sneaks out as Willow every once in a while.
They turned Jeff Hardy back into Jeff Hardy so that they'd have marketability.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't have the roster in front of me, but I know it pretty well, man. And
I know Samoa Joe pretty well too.
I mean, Jesus Christ, you can't go Samoa Joe. He's too big of a name.
No, you can't. That's not going to work.
Kenny King.
I don't think Kenny King could pull off a zombie character, though. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm understating Kenny King's abilities, but. That almost seems too much of a stretch to have him going from being the bombastic guy. Manic, yeah, maybe. Tigre Uno, I guess you could repackage into a complete heel monster.
Change the colors.
Yeah, I mean,
change his color scheme.
Have him be more tigery. I really don't know.
Have him be more than one tiger.
Tigre dos. Evil Tigre dos.
I don't know.
So this match between Aries and Sonata goes all of 6 minutes or just under 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And the only bright spot I can say about this is I actually like Sonata's new finisher, this is his finisher, but I like the finish a lot. The match ends with Aries on his knees. Sonata delivers a shuffle sidekick directly to the jaw of Aries from a kneeling position. So if you were to take the last call super kick and add it to a Shining Wizard and divide it by two, that's what you got here. You have like the perfect mixture of a last call super kick and a Shining Wizard, which is the James Storm and the Great Muta finishes respectively.
Shining kick.
Yeah.
Shiny Hito.
It's almost like what Del Rio does, or the Alberto Del Rio cross
maybe.
Kick. But
maybe
yeah,
Del Rio is who he's going to save.
Yeah, that would be great. Alberto Del Rio comes in and is saved by James Storm.
Yeah.
Boy, I need to see that.
Here's one of the things that annoyed me, I guess. It was a decent match.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This should
have been a jobber and not Austin Aries.
But
arguably the hottest guy in the
company. It should have been sold better. It should have been the commentary did not measure up to what they needed to be doing during this match, because during the match there were definite moments where Sonata does something and then, or Great Sonata does something, and then he turns to Storm and Storm yells something at him, points at him, or something like that.
And the control section starts right after Storm gives him the redirect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he gets the redirect, and that's never really sold by the commentary at all. And it's like,
you caught that and brought that up to me.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, he just went to his mentor, got mentored, and then schooled Aries for like
took back over
a second or so, 30 seconds or so, and you didn't sell that at all. And they did go back and forth. It was like here's my control section, here's your control section, here's my control section, here's yours. And then
eventually there's a distraction,
right?
Storm distracts,
and they don't even sell that very
well.
Which
allows for the mist, which allows for the shiny kick,
I guess, whatever we're calling it.
Apparently, spitting mist in your opponents. Guys, don't tell me about Muta matches. I'm familiar with Muta matches. But apparently, spitting mist in your opponent's face is not a disqualifiable offense.
He didn't see it. They tried to sell that the ref didn't see it.
There's still green mist on fucking Aries.
There's green mist all over his chest, and there's green mist all. Yeah.
Again, we just came out of a match where EC3 hit Rhino with the chair. Yeah. That's the only reason I'm bringing this up, because we just had a disqualification finish.
Right.
It's so, I don't know. It's silly to me. I get where we're going, and I get that you want to have Storm interfere to protect Ares, so that you don't make Ares look like a goon.
Yeah, definitely.
To make him look like a goon.
That's
fine. But here's
fine.
The whole thing. Fuck that. Don't even have Ares in this match.
Yeah.
Have a squash match. Yeah. Have the great Sonata dismantle Dewey Barnes, who's the dearly departed Dewey Barnes. Have the great Sonata dismantle Dewey Barnes for about 5 minutes. Or like 4 minutes. And, you know, have Dewey do his super ultra generic hope spots. Have him try to get this New York crowd going. You know, there's ways to get Dewey over. Dewey actually does a pretty decent job connecting with crowds.
Dewey's just really an example. There's plenty of other places that you could have gone with this.
They did not need to go this route.
Yeah.
No way.
This was silly.
There's actually not that many other places they could have gone with this because they've culled the roster so much that they don't have enhancement talents.
Well, no, you just wasted six guys earlier in the show.
That's true. Yeah.
Any six of them.
Now, you know what? That's a really good point. You could have had Tigre Uno in this spot, and Tigre Uno and Sonata had that series earlier this year. You bring that up, and Tigre Uno goes for the handshake. Sonata immediately kicks the hand right out of the way.
And just stomps
and just
you.
Just destroys Tigre Uno.
Yeah, it's a stomp match.
Yeah. And so you use Tigre Uno in that enhancement talent capacity. That would make some sense. But we didn't get that. Instead, we didn't help one of the hottest guys in the company, one of your most over baby faces. We made him kind of look like a dupe. And, oh, by the way, the great Sonata color scheme is all over the place. His pants are still the multicolored fucking Technicolor dream coat that he was wearing last week, but they're like a modified version of the Technicolor dream coat that he normally wears, which is fine when you're a babyface. He's colorful. He's from Japan. They wear lots of colors. I get all of that. But so now we have like this blue, red, silver, all sorts of colors happening on his fucking pants. His face.
Black and yellow face
black
paint.
And yellow, which you always associate with Great Muta.
No.
You don't. You associate golden fucking yellow with Goldust and Stardust. And then, oh, by the way, he's got red hair. So we've got all these different fucking colors going on. And it's just like, here's the deal. You're a heel now. Black.
Bad guys wear black.
Bad guys wear black.
And a cowboy should know that.
And one color. Like maybe one color.
Black and yellow.
Yeah, if you want to go black and yellow, it's fine. Use Sonata dust.
Put some yellow crosses on the side of you.
Put some crosses on it. Heels wear crosses, you see. They love Jesus. Yeah. Like all heels.
Well, I mean, James Storm is his mentor.
Don't fucking get me started on that. Don't. So anyways, I hated it. It's like, the funny part is, if you see Sonata's heel work in Japan, he does a good sort of demon-looking character, and I thought that the face, the stone, stoic face was good. Sonata can do this role. It's just that, like, he looks so fucking goofy this week. I it was hard for me to take him seriously. If James Storm is his mentor, why is he acting like the Great Muta? Why? If the whole point of joining James Storm was a visceral rejection of your teacher, who you were the protege of, why fucking emulate him?
Because James Storm wants him to make fun of Muta.
I guess,
and they're trying to
not
warm
enough
this,
of that has been told.
And they're trying to warm this up early, I guess, for the Bound for Glory.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only real
hope,
route that
I would
I
hope
say.
that would be the thing, but...
That's the only way that can
yeah,
work.
Yeah, it's the only way. I mean, I would hope that would be the case, but it's...
But you dress him upright... If you dress him upright and you explain this a little bit more, the James Storm stuff a little bit more, which I think might come soon.
This match was not booked well. The wrestling was bad because actually the wrestling was good.
That's what I'm saying.
This is like the inverse of the Madison Rayne and Taryn Terrell match, which was booked well, executed poorly.
Right.
This was executed well. It was just fucking garbage to execute.
Yeah.
It was just like a lot of garbage.
I don't have a problem with his heel work. I don't have a problem with Aries' babyface work. I don't have any problem with the way that they orchestrated their match together.
We got to get nitpicky about Aries a little bit. The wearing a cape that says the greatest man who ever lived is not really a babyface.
No, that is true.
Yeah, but
and, well,
wearing a cape isn't really babyface.
Also his sitting on the ropes. Move.
That's
a heelish move to me.
I think that is heelish, but it's a little bit more forgivable in an anti-hero. People like guys who have swagger. People like a winner. And Aries feels like a winner, particularly when it's like, I'm not even really in second gear yet. However,
I'm not as high on Aries as you are.
When he does that and he loses, it looks stupid. Yeah. I agree with that. I'm actually very high on Aries. I think
I know.
And he's grown on me. I think that he's got a lot of mileage.
In going back and watching some of the Bobby Roode Aries stuff, I'm like, Bobby Roode made that hilarious and made that kind of go together a lot better.
Bobby Roode has good comedic timing.
Yeah.
Bobby Roode has very good comedic timing. I like his heel work. Aries and Bobby Roode are really what keep me going back to the well week in, week out.
There's some of it. There's some other guys on here.
There's other guys on the roster who are great, but I could
a lot of which we'll get to in the main event. To be honest, with you.
Sure. Okay, yeah. Let's move on. Chris Melendez introduction.
Yeah.
There's not so much to say. This is a feel good story. They've gotten some positive attention in New York City for this story. I think that. TNA wanted to create a human interest story, and I think that they slightly overplayed it in the way that commentary, not heinously so that they burned up goodwill or anything like that. I just felt like there was a little too much on the noseness of Mike TNA, kind of like hitting you with the subtlety hammer, to use a Joe Lanza term. Hitting you with the subtlety hammer of, isn't it so fucking great that we have this wounded warrior? Isn't it so awesome? He's a wounded warrior. He's an amputee. Yeah. Jesus Christ. So many different ways to tell us that this guy does not have a leg and he will be wrestling. So that's fine. Hopefully he can go in the ring. We haven't seen it yet. I've not seen really any reports on his in-ring prowess. We just get an extended Chris Melendez introduction where Kurt Angle welcomes out Chris Melendez. Melendez comes out to his theme, which is, you know, star-spangled military doo-doo-doo.
Man, love USA.
It's what you expect. But here's what you would also expect in the ring. His trainers, and they're there. Bully Ray and D-Von, who trained Chris Melendez for free, which is really cool of them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Ken Anderson, who served in the military as well, right?
And is kind of the guy that found him.
Yeah, and he's a
kind of the talent finder there.
He's a wounded warrior guy, and he was the guy, who helped kind of get him in with Bully Ray and D-Von, so very helpful in Chris Melendez's journey and does a lot of work with the Wounded Warrior Foundation.
Once again, awesome.
Cool. So you know who else should be here?
I do.
It would be Gunner.
The gunman.
Yeah, the guy, our Iraq war veteran who has PTSD and has a friend, as he's told Sam Shaw, who sometimes can't sleep at night because of terrible dreams that he has.
Yeah.
I feel bad making light of it, but there's just like, some of the things they make Gunner say are so ridiculous. It's hard not to laugh. But Gunner's not there. There is no Gunner. Even though Gunner said that he was going to be dressed up and ready to go. Apparently, Sam Shaw donning Gunner's clothing, his military uniform, just poisoned the well. Gunner
he's
is
just
not,
done with it. I'm not doing
not
anything
fucking
now.
Doing that. And I mean, you could question why the hell Anderson's in the ring, too. I mean, I get that it is Anderson's work with the Wounded Warrior Foundation and everything. But Anderson's currently being booked in a Shades of Grey storyline.
Yeah.
And he doesn't necessarily need to be over here getting strong baby face.
It would make more sense for Gunner than, than Anderson.
Yes. Yes.
By that.
Shades of Grey storyline, as much as anyone can be anything in our Shades of Grey storyline, Gunner has felt like the baby face.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Anderson has felt like the heel. And Anderson has been the aggressor in this storyline. So Anderson or Gunner should have been there. Anderson shouldn't have been. And it would have fucking mattered one lick to Chris Melendez whether or not Anderson was in there in the ring or not. These are the silly things. Anyways, Melendez gets introduced. Good for the guy. I think it is great that this guy has been able to find a second life after what I'm sure was truly an ordeal over in Iraq.
Obviously, traumatic.
Truly an ordeal.
Yeah.
And he was a young man who went through a truly horrifying experience at under the age of 18. I mean, legally a man, but still very much in that twilight between boy and man that you find yourself between 18 and 21 or 22. And
right.
He had horrific, life-altering things happen to him, and he's found renewed purpose and overcame real, true physical difficulties to become a professional wrestler. He may not be a great professional wrestler, but I applaud him as a person for doing what he did. At the same time, let's talk a little bit more about the TNA roster. How can the TNA roster support this guy? And I'm talking about in terms of enhancement talent. I'm talking about in terms of feud. I'm not just saying, like, this guy needs to be on the welfare dole. I'm saying that, like, this guy, you can't make him a jobber. You can't have the guy with...
No, he has to take some wins.
He has to win. He has to win.
Steve will take a loss.
He has to fight for Wonder, but is he really going to feud with Crazy Steve? If anything, it'd be like you start with the bromance. You have the bromance bully him, and you have him, like, work through DJZ, and you have him then work through Jesse and Robbie E, and you can feed him some of these undercard, or what undercard heels you have, but who is Chris Melendez going to wrestle on the regular? Who does he feud with? How do you make this not tasteless going down the line?
Shaw.
I know, Sam Shaw.
I don't know. Is it Shaw? Yeah, I don't know.
Is it Anderson?
I don't know.
Do you have him have a feud with Ken Anderson because Melendez outside of the ring is very comfortable with Anderson? Brittany?
Bring him in as a heel.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Brittany.
No, bring him in as a heel on September 11th. Like, he's supposed to be having his first match September 11th.
Me.
Yeah. Here's the... And you missed this part. This part was in the weird, skippy craziness of our recording that we were watching. First, let me say, great story. Mm-hmm. I prior military as well, and I greatly appreciate any guy that's willing to go out and do these things. I have personal ideas of what I am willing to do whenever I went into the Navy. That was not go on the front line.
Yeah, it's really weird that he kept saying, I wanted to go on the front lines.
Like, that's not normally what a lot of people say.
Dream.
But if that's what you want to do, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
I respect his willingness to do that, and I certainly will not act like that. It's not an important thing.
Yeah,
yeah, but boy, that's a weird thing to articulate.
That's not what I went in for, but...
It's a weird thing to articulate.
Yeah, go with it, brother. Here's the big thing. During Angle's intro of Melendez, he starts to make this really awkward comparison of himself as a gold medal winner representing his country to a guy who lost his lower leg to an IED in Iraq and defending his country. He makes this comparison saying that these...
Melendez should have won a gold medal?
No, he cleans it up a little bit there towards the end. And Angle says, you know, hey, I'm what you did is way more than anything I ever did. Then why the fuck are you even saying it?
It's a weird equivalency. Like,
Why even bring it up?
I get it. He's an Olympic hero and in a way, like an American hero to a certain subset. I mean, certainly an American hero with a tarnished legacy. Angle's just had so many problems.
No, yeah, I get that.
I still think of the time he got stopped not that far from where we are right now. He was on 380. He got stopped high on pills. Was he? Yeah, he was on 380. He was not far from here on like a crazy drug-fueled drive through to the country.
You're going to compare yourself.
You're going to make this weird equivalency. This,
yeah, and there was a moment that really, and I like Kurt Angle a whole lot, but there's a moment that really did kind of like get under my skin and piss me off.
Yeah, it was like weird. It's a weird thing to equivocate.
Yeah, that was inappropriate.
So we got that. And here's the crazy part. Now we're going to move into our main event. Our main event is the first in
the championship series.
About Melendez?
Yeah.
That's how I was about to jump.
No. 3D, the
3D versus the Hardys versus the Wolves.
Yeah.
The first match, which is a tag three-way match, which you and I don't like because it's weird. The psychology of the team that is not in the ring tagging in always seems to be lacking. Of course, all three of these teams are complete professionals, so even that wasn't too clunky.
Yeah, they rise above.
They rise above the weird stipulation.
Yeah. God, I hate three-way tags.
Why not just do it like a tornado tag match? Like, I don't get it. Like, you know, the Texas tornado tag. Everyone is legal. Everyone's a legal man. And we are, you know, it's just you pin whoever you can pin. And it's a bit of a scramble. And it's spot fest. And guys are resting outside and, you know, getting ready for their next spots. And boy, the one thing I will say about this match, everyone was in and out. Everyone knew what they were doing. It was a professional match.
Nobody was lost,
this
ever.
This was the professional part of professional wrestling. This is a professional wrestling match. They did it quite well. It was dynamic. Great spots. This is a great match to watch. You have Jeff Hardy doing Whispers in the Wind. You had Matt Hardy do a big old moonsault from the top rope to the outside that looked great and was protected wonderfully well by
3D mostly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think Jeff was.
But actually, Jeff was protected well by the Wolves when he went and did his little outside. Yeah,
God, that's got to be so nice when you're a wrestler and you're a high flying wrestler and you just know whenever you take this jump. Especially a moonsault or something like that.
Bubba Ray Dudley is going to be there to catch you and break your fall.
Yeah. Bubba and Devon are going to be there to get me. Or Davey and Eddie are going to be there to get me. Yeah. Or Matt and Jeff are going to be there to get me. They'll do it.
A professional, good, solid match.
Oh, it was nice to just watch this nice ebb and flow and real easy in and out of from this move to that move to this person to that person. Kept you guessing on who's going to win what's going to happen.
This is clever booking in the sense that you kept the focus on the Wolves and the Hardys.
Yeah.
Which did two things. One, prevented us from having to deal with the psychology of how the fuck are these guys tagging in and out of the ring when there's no reason for you to tag anyone other than your partner.
Yeah.
You just keep most of the matches the Wolves versus the Hardys. But then it also sets up the finish, which is the Dudleys come in there and snake it out.
Yeah.
And get the 3D after essentially Matt Hardy almost had the match won.
Yeah, after the heavy lifting kind of had been done in the ring.
Yeah, yeah. Matt was closing in on the win when he had the twist of fate, and then afterwards one of the Wolves, I think it's Eddie or is it Davey, gets walked right into a 3D, which Bully Ray slides out. Like, his timing for this was just excellent. He comes like sneakily out, as sneaky as a guy as his size can come into a ring, sneaks into the ring, and it's just like there.
It almost doesn't look like he's gonna make it there on time.
I know, it's great. That's classic Dudley's.
Yeah,
that's classic Dudley's. The 3D, what's great about it is it is nearly out of nowhere, or it has an out of nowhere feel.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real good.
Arguably the best finisher, the best two-man finisher out there for a tag team. It's hard to find one that's more that you look at it and it's
more
just,
bang for your buck is pretty sweet, dude.
What do you mean?
More bang for your buck, the Young Bucks finisher?
Oh.
Yeah. The more bang for your buck is pretty fucking awesome.
Still.
No, if we're talking like classics, like pre-2000 or whatever, right up there.
Yeah. And it's got some staying power, man. It still looks good.
It still looks good. I love it, especially with the six-sided ring. You can hit that 3D out of so many more angles. And so that opens up more options.
The six-sided ring, I believe, makes it even harder on this three-way tag thing. Because the three-way tag, when you have a four-sided ring, it's not as rounded off.
Right.
So you know where you're keeping those people away from.
Well, you have the triangle. I mean, I don't actually think the six-sided thing. I mean, you just put the guys on a triangle.
Well, but
corner, corner, corner.
But now you can't... Now you can't, like, let's say I'm setting you up and I'm just throwing you off the ropes or something like that. I have to be really selective of which ropes I'm throwing you off.
Yes, I as a wrestler have to think a little bit harder.
And stuff like that, because I can't throw you off the ropes that are near another team that might be able to tag you, and I can't throw you off
tornado
the ropes
tag
that are
match.
Near...
Tornado tag match.
Or elimination tag, or...
Well, no, like, I mean, you have to have at least three... You have to have a participant of each team in the ring. Would be the way you would do this. My cat is joining us now in the podcast. Now joining us in the studio is none other than Hazy T Cat.
Hazy T Cat.
Hello, Hazy. Anything to add on this match?
It's funny that Matt at the very end
really
is
angry
just pissed.
Really
he's
angry.
Just pissed.
Very angry about
I mean,
Hardy.
He did do the heavy lifting, like we said, it seems like.
I get that he's frustrated, but like in a match, the whole point of doing this was supposed to be like, wouldn't it be really neat if we had all these really great matches against each other? And I think it's way too early in the series to start telling the tale of one team starts getting legitimately pissed off.
Yeah.
That shouldn't happen until...
No, not yet.
It'd be the third match when one of these two teams or one of these three teams does not have a win and their back's against the wall and they're in a must-win situation.
Right, and you're facing the other two teams being able to get a two.
Right. They're in a must. It's a must-win for that team, and then you would have desperation. Out of that desperation, heel tactics come through. Your true character comes through.
Yeah,
it's not that hard of a.
Which is why I would.
Psychology is not that.
Which
hard.
Is why I wouldn't think that 3D would win first. I thought that they would be the last to win.
You know, this because is they're my the mistake. Ones that would. Their stipulation, because the winner gets to name a stipulation. God, yeah. We love that. And their stipulation is so immediately obvious. There's going to be a tables match. New York's crowd loves tables matches, so you have a tables match next episode, which presumably for all of these teams is later on today, or when they were taping this.
Yeah,
it was. So they had a 10-minute match. It's a bit short because you've got another match that you have to go out and have later. These are the limitations of TNA crunch taping. You can't actually give wrestlers time to go out and have 20-minute classics because you want to use them the next week, and their roster's not deep enough that they can really get away without using those people.
Yeah, that's why the real matches in this matchup aren't going to be until the fourth match. Is it going to be until the third and fourth match?
Yeah, we'll talk about those matches. I'm real interested to see that fourth match, Brian. Yeah. That fourth match has a lot of intrigue for me.
Well, the third and fourth match, you know what I mean. Whatever.
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying however this thing is going to finish off has a lot of intrigue for me, considering one of our participants is no longer with the company. We don't have his contributions taped. So we'll see what happens. Go to voicesofwrestling.com, go on iTunes, go on Stitcher. Please write this podcast feed a review. You help this show, which you may like or you may not like, but you also help Shake Them Ropes and WrestleSpective and the flagship show. And you can put a review up there and get us increased visibility so that we stick out among all of the other many wrestling podcasts, because voicesofwrestling.com truly is a one-stop shop for all things wrestling, American and Japanese. Check it out if you aren't checking it out more already. A lot of great written reviews on there, too, man. There's a lot of content. We have a lot of content. You can follow me on Twitter at CHRISNOVEMBRINO. You can email the show at talktodrnove@gmail.com. And if you ever do, or if you ever call the show line, the show phone line, which you can hit me up and I'll give you the information for, we will run that stuff on the show and discuss any of your comments and questions. Until the next one, I am Dr. Nove. Thank you so much for listening, and cheers.
In a world of 1 million wrestling podcasts, there is a new shining star with great interviews, analysis, music, and me, Matt Kuhn, on Total Engagement. Go to any podcast platform to listen today.